In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
I mean, I remember on Friday nights, we'd have a game, and then Chris and I would shower, and then we would go to like a little teen nightclub in Summers Point. And it seemed like every time we'd get picked up by a guy in a pickup truck, and we would hop in the back of the pickup truck. And by the time we got to the club, our hair was like full of icicles, you know, because we had wet hair.
And our guest this week is Scott Bittner. He is the head men's basketball coach at Division III Stockton University down in Galloway. Just led the Ospreys to the Sweet 16 of the Division III tournament for the second straight year. And Scott, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
So as we are recording this, you're, I don't know, a couple weeks removed from the season. Have you processed everything? How long does it take you to kind of put a bow on a season?
You know, it's probably the first thing I do is put a bow on it, because I think it's the best time to start preparing for next season. So the minute the season ends, I mean, the next day I pull out my notebook, and you know, as the season's going on, I'm constantly taking notes, what I think's working, what's not working, and whatnot. And so I kind of compile those notes the next day. So what was that? The game we played on a Friday. So Saturday, I probably spent 2 or 3 hours just jotting down different drills and whatnot that I think we need to incorporate next year, because, you know, flaws that I thought we had this season. So I just think debriefing right away is the best way to do it.
Are you a big goal person with regard to, I would like to see us win X amount of games, I would like to see us do X, I would like to see us get this far in the NCAA tournament? Or are you more focused on having success, getting better, improvement, and whatever that looks like, whatever road we take, I'm comfortable with that?
Yeah, I'm probably more process-based. You know, my players would probably tell you the same thing, because, you know, we had quite a bit of friction this season because I wasn't happy with our standards on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, I kind of thought that an end was coming just because I didn't think we had the right habits. So I'm probably more process-based. And, yeah, I've bumped into 100 people, 200 people in the last few weeks congratulating me on a great season. And in my mind, I think we could have done more. It was nice to get to the Sweet 16, but I thought we left some meat on the bone.
One of the things about specifically tournament play is the way finality hits you like a brick wall, because you mentioned you're in the Sweet 16, and on one hand, you've got multiple scouts for who you could play in the Elite Eight if you win, and everybody's excited and all, and then the game's over, and just like that, it's done. How difficult from a coaching standpoint is that sudden finality to deal with, and do you think you have adjusted to it as you've gone on as a coach?
Yeah, I mean, the last month of the season, you know that it could come to an end, and you know that stinks, but you also know you're getting your life back too. I just kind of look at it as, you know, that's a part of the job, right? And it's a 5-month grind. It, you know, could be a little bit longer or shorter depending on how your season goes. And I mean, the way I look at it is I just get to spend more time with my children. So I don't go into a deep depression when the season's over. I just kind of like exhale and I think I do my best work as a coach in the off season. So I kind of get right to work, you know?
What is it you like about the off season?
I think clearer, and I think I can be a little more creative with implementing ideas that I want to do next season. I'm a huge learner, so I'll read a ton of books. I watch a lot of YouTube videos. I watch every game under the sun, and I just kind of break down different things I like and don't like. It's the part of the game I enjoy the most, really, is the 6 months now up until October.
I'm curious, specifically the Division I level, from 5 years ago to now, it's almost a completely different world from a coaching standpoint because of the transfer portal, NIL, like, you know, it's completely different. Better, worse is up to the individual, but it's a different. Has life changed that much at the Division III?
It's changed a lot more than I thought it would. You know, there's a half a dozen high school kids that I've been chasing all year, and I really like them. And then next thing you know, these guys' college seasons ends, and I'm getting hundreds of emails from college players inquiring about transferring in. And you know, I have a certain sense of morality about me when it comes to recruiting and doing what's best for a kid. And it kind of twists me in different directions because, you know, now I'm, you know, these kids that I said I really, really want, now I'm not sure I have room for them, you know? So it has changed a ton. I've gotten Division I, Division II kids visiting campus. And then all of a sudden, the local kids you really, really like don't become as important. And I can see the anguish in a lot of high school kids. Some really good players, particularly from South Jersey, don't have a home yet. And that's kind of unseen at this time of the year, that, you know, and they're starting to panic. And so I feel bad for them too. So yeah, it's definitely trickled down.
Do you think we will eventually find a level where it's not this kind of controlled chaos every year? Or do you think this is probably going to be life in one way or another for the foreseeable future?
Well, we just seem to empower the kids more and more every year. And I guess this is kids empowerment. And what they don't realize is indirectly they're hurting most kids. You know, sure, it's empowering some, but between COVID and that year off and now this transfer portal, like, kids, you know, you have high school seniors playing AAU again and spending a lot of time and money doing that, just looking for a home. I can't see it going away. I really can't. It just seems like more and more the world's becoming more chaos.
How does that affect, because I'm sure when you're building a program, when you're maintaining a program, in the before times before all this, you would say, all right, we've got our point guard for the next couple of years, but we should start looking for, you know, a sophomore in high school who could be that kid down the road. I mean, you kind of can throw that all up in the air. I guess the positive is if you have a really big hole to fill, you can grab somebody with some more experience, but it makes it much more of just kind of a year-to-year type situation when it comes to building, no?
Yeah, I think it's good and bad, right? I mean, like, I have a lot of friends at Division I level that they have a bad year, and they're like, wow, we can fix this thing right away, you know? We don't have to go through the process. You know, for me, I don't love it because I'm relationship-based. You know, I want to go to players' weddings, you know? And do you go to players' weddings when they're only here for a year? I don't know. Like, you get them for 8 months. So I don't want to go that way completely, that's for sure. I still think that the most important players in our league the last half a dozen seasons have been four-year kids, whether it's for Stockton or whether it's for somebody else. I think culture is your most important thing, and it's hard to have a great culture when you don't really know the kid. It's hard to hold kids accountable when you're just meeting them in September, and then third week of October, they're not doing a defensive drill right. You can't coach him as hard as you can a kid that's been with you for 3 years. So I prefer the relationship base, but I can see the value in this for a coach too, in terms of, yeah, we got to fix this position right away. And the only way we're going to be able to do it is through a transfer, because there's high school kids can't come into our league and make a difference right away 99% of the time. If they could, they'd be getting scholarships.
So let's talk a little bit about your background. Jersey Shore, you grew up, and reading up on you, it sounds like you were a basketball junkie from the early days, huh?
I was. You know, I was fortunate. My closest friend growing up was Chris Curdio, and so him and I were, you know, inseparable from an early age on, and still are in a way. Like, So I was lucky. I had a guy to pal around with that loved basketball as much as I did. And then, you know, one of our other closest friends we met a little later in life was Billy Lang, is the St. Joe's coach. So, you know, I have guys that live and breathe basketball like I did. So it, you know, it made it kind of normal. But I was definitely a basketball junkie. My dad was a basketball guy. He was involved at Basketball Temple. So, you know, when he was in college. So it's kind of in my blood, I guess.
When did you start to realize you were pretty good growing up?
You know, I was always a better baseball and soccer player naturally. And it's not as much I realized I was pretty good as I realized I loved it, basketball, more because I like the challenge. I like defying my height. You know, the other sports just came easier to me. So those days I regret not continuing to play baseball because I thought that came so easy to me. But I probably seventh, going in eighth grade is when I realized that basketball was the sport I wanted to focus on. That was the age I was able to like start sneaking into pickup games with, you know, high school and college players when I was like 12, 13 years old. And, you know, pickup basketball, the Jersey Shore at that time was, you know, was as good as it gets. So I was fortunate, you know, in that upbringing.
As kind of an aside, someone who grew up at the Jersey Shore, what are the winters like? What's it like, you know, growing up? I'm sure it's in the summer, it's incredible and you've got everything at your fingertips. But, you know, if I'm talking to 14-year-old Scott Bittner on a Tuesday in December down the shore, what's life like?
I mean, I loved it, I guess. I mean, you know, I thought Ocean City's the greatest town to grow up in. You just put your bike on the boardwalk at 12 years old and your parents don't have to worry about it. You can get wherever you're going to go. I think you can lead a relatively independent childhood, right? Like it was safe. You know, I think about it now with my children. I don't let them do near the things I did. You know, my parents were sending me to Vol Tacos for cheesesteaks when I was like 7 years old on my bike, you know, and that just doesn't happen anymore. And, you know, in the winter, I do very strongly remember, you know, we owned a hotel on A Street in Ocean City. And I remember sitting on the front porch every Labor Day in a deep depression because all my 14 and 15 year old girlfriends were going home for the winter. I can remember that. But, you know, once winter came, like, yeah, the school, yeah, it was a big, Ocean City High School was a big school. And then the middle school was a big school. And then going to St. Augustine, I was going, you know, I was going to a town that, you know, everybody lived there full time. So I don't know if I notice it as much as I get a little bit older. And then the crazy thing is now I love it more. You know, I love a February day in the high 50s with the sun at the Jersey Shore better than I love it any time of the year.
So I also, in reading up on you, and you mentioned your friendship with Chris Caridio, the head coach at Widener, veteran of this podcast. And the thing in the one of the articles I read, you guys used to hitchhike everywhere?
Yeah, we you know, I mean, I can remember my freshman year of high school, my dad dropping me off at St. Augustine. And I said, all right, I'll see you like at 3. He goes, you probably won't get home till 5. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you're going to hitchhike home. He said, when I was your age, I hitchhiked from North Philadelphia to Townsend's Inlet and see how every Friday. He said, there's no reason why you can't hitchhike home. So we often hitchhiked home from the prep. And then, you know, Chris and I would hitchhike everywhere to go play pickup. I mean, the best pickup games at the shore were in Avalon and we weren't driving yet. So we would hitchhike from Ocean City to Avalon at 6 a.m. to go play basketball. You know, it's crazy. Like kids today, they don't even know what I'm talking about. What do you mean hitchhiking? What is hitchhiking? Then we had a couple stories having to hop out of a moving car here and there because people were drunk. But, you know, I don't know. It was a great way to grow up.
Did it seem crazy at the time? Like you'd specifically those situations where you got into somebody that probably you shouldn't have gotten in, or it was just life.
You could tell within 15 seconds if you got in the wrong car or not. And then a lot of times it was friends picking you up. I mean, I remember on Friday nights we'd have a game and then Chris and I would shower and then we would go to like a little teen nightclub in Summers Point. And it seemed like every time we'd get picked up by a guy in a pickup truck and we would hop in the back of the pickup truck. And by the time we got to the club, our hair was like full of icicles, you know, because we had wet hair. Just thinking back of it. I guess people would think it was crazy. It was more crazy, like in terms of parenting, right? Like I thought I had strict parents. And then looking back, I'm like, geez, I did a lot of stuff. Like as a 15, 16 year old, they're like, go ahead, go find your way, you know? And I'm reading a book now on parenting and it's by like a dean of students at Stanford. And it's about basically overparenting today and like how our children are not able to grow and they're not able to be become good independent adults because we just overdo it. And I kind of think back to my childhood, I guess that's the way it was, you know, like you just let your children kind of become young adults at 15, 16. So they're able to go to college and act responsibly. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it is a different world. To your point, I remember things growing up. I grew up in South Jersey, more, you know, Gloucester County. But things we did that if they were done now, people would look at like, how are you allowing that to happen? How could, you know, it's really something. And it's not that long ago.
No, it's funny. I took one of my players wants to be a coach. So he came recruiting with me today. One day in Ocean City was playing Mainland, and they were playing in the old, they had to play at the Ocean City Intermediate School because there was a flood at Ocean City High School. And we're walking to the gym, and I said, you wouldn't believe what I did in this gym one day. There was a carnival, and I lit a smoke bomb and just rolled it in the middle of the carnival. And if you did that today, like, you'd be on national news, right? And you'd be like a terrorist. And back then, it was just like a 14-year-old boy just like doing, you know, childish things. No, good old days. It was a simpler, funner time in a lot of ways.
Give me a scout of your game. Young Scott Bittner on the court. What made you good?
I don't know. I think I had a few different careers growing up. I think like as a 15-year-old kid, you're always trying to please everybody else, and you're insecure, and you're fighting your confidence. You're figuring out what makes you tick and whatnot. And then I think when I got into college is when I really found myself as a basketball player, and I kind of reached the pinnacle of who I could be in terms of my belief in myself. So I think you saw the best version of me in college. I mean, not many guys have better college careers, but I certainly was probably one of them. And I think it's because I felt comfortable with who I was. And, you know, I just became really, really confident in my abilities. You know, I was known as a shooter growing up, but I tried to defy those odds because last thing I wanted to be known as like a white jump shooter, you know? So I was probably considered a fairly athletic and really good with the ball, you know, and I think it's because I worked on that because I didn't want to just be a shooter.
You played most of your college career at Wheeling Jesuit. You talk about kind of finding yourself and all. Was there a moment you remember during your college days when you kind of realized that you had become comfortable with who you were as a player and stuff like that? Was there an aha moment?
I think it was an aha summer. I just remember working out one summer and just taking it to another level with my preparation. And I just felt myself getting better and better. And it was really, really just training better, you know, like being more efficient. You know, Chris and I would have summer days. I mean, heck, we would start off like weightlifting at like 8 or 9 in the morning, and then we'd run the Ocean City boardwalk, and then we would go do drills for 2 hours, you know, and we would do drills in weighted vest and in strength, you know, strength shoes. We'd play full court one-on-one in strength shoes for like an hour. And then we'd go to the beach for a couple hours, and then we'd get in our car and drive to Media, Pennsylvania for a summer league game. And that was every single day. And I don't think we could do anything but start to get really confident, you know, because we worked so hard. But it was like an 8 or 9 hour day just trying to, you know, prepare for the next season.
And was that all just on you and on Chris? Like, was this, did coaches give you a list of, hey, these are things you should try? Or was this just you guys doing this?
Yeah, that was him and I would just invent stuff. You know, we would just, all right, we got to get better at this. And it's sad how it's changed. You know, there was no trainers back then. Yeah, you know, I read like crazy. So I would find the best drills or whatever through books, or I'd go through the 5-star basketball camp drill book, and we would do that. And a lot of it is we just play a ton of one-on-one with each other, and we just kind of like iron sharpened iron. But you don't see kids doing anything what we did. Like, everything's AAU and everything's prepared. You know, we would go to Oceans. You know, we'd play pickup basketball at 12, 13, 14 years old. And it's funny how that is probably my greatest learning tool in my life. College professors think they have so much to do with your educating you. No, the park educated me. All my personality traits, good and bad, I probably learned on the pickup basketball court. You know, it's sad that, you know, and I feel that my children aren't going to live basketball in its greatest form in my mind.
Who are some of the other people that you played against, played with on those summer leagues that maybe people would be familiar with?
Oh, I mean, Chris and I played hundreds of games with Tim Legler, you know, I mean, the face of ESPN basketball, really, in terms of the NBA. So we played with him a ton. I mean, Fran O'Hanlon, Fran Dunphy was always at the park. Steve Donahue, the Penn coach, was at the park every, you know, this was why we were hitchhiking a half hour each way, you know, is to play basketball with those guys. Steve Rosenberry, who was a great player, ended up being a scout with the Trailblazers. He was one of the guys. I mean, Chris Collins, a Northwestern coach, you'd often find him in Avalon playing pickup. Matt Langle was always there. So it was kind of like a who's who. And funny thing is, most of the guys ended up being coaches. I'm trying to think, at Ocean City, Chris Corciani, who was the all-time assist leader, you know, he was frequently in Ocean City because his family was from Wildwood. You know, they moved to Florida, but they had a summer home in Wildwood. I was really fortunate in my freshman year of high school to have a good game against St. Anthony's. And Coach Hurley invited me and one of my other teammates, Teddy Gladue, to stay with them in Jersey City and attend their camp. And that one thing turned into another. And I would spend half my summers in Jersey City living at the Hurley house. So there's two huge names with Danny and Bobby Hurley. So I was really lucky. I mean, New Jersey has great basketball, and, you know, I just searched it out.
Was there a moment, and I'm sure it wasn't in the moment because you're just a kid, you're enjoying playing basketball, but have there been moments since when you've looked back and just kind of in awe of who you got to play with and who you got to just spend summers on the court with? Because that's incredibly cool. Like, I'm incredibly jealous of an experience like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I've had enough gratitude for how lucky I was. I mean, geez, heck, we'd go to St. Anthony's, we'd play at White Eagle, and 9 of the 10 players were in the Big East or the ACC, you know. I mean, no, I was lucky. Chris Gent was another guy who was at Ohio State, played for the Houston Rockets. Matt Maloney was a good friend of mine. Like me, him and Billy Lang would play full court one-on-one at Bishop Eustace in the summers. And he played in the NBA. So, yeah, I probably should look back on it more and think of how lucky I was. The thing I think I do appreciate is the friendships I've made. You know, like, I'm still really, really tight with a lot of the guys that I kind of played with growing up. Tim Legler texts me, I think, after one of our, you know, NCAA tournament wins or something. So we still stay in touch.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Stockton University head men's basketball coach Scott Bittner right after this. This is One-on-One.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with Scott Bittner, head men's basketball coach at Division III Stockton University. So we were talking about playing on the playgrounds down the shore and summer leagues. And do you think, looking back, even at that young age, you looked at the game through coach's eyes?
Yeah, I think I was definitely a coach on the floor. And Chris, I'd say the same thing. I mean, I remember in high school, if we had a 3 or 4 point lead, the game was kind of over in the fourth quarter, just because it was like three guards that could all shoot 90% from the foul line and make good decisions. You know, I think about it all the time, as I don't think I feel as comfortable with my players as, you know, Coach Rodeo was able to feel it with Chris and I and our other friend Teddy. But it's changed. You know, kids are not as independent on the court. They're not as independent in life, you know. So I think one of the challenges as a coach is to try to kind of get your kids to be self-thinkers on the floor. And it's not always pretty when you give them too much of a leash, but if you can get them a little bit of a leash, and you know, they'll have a tendency to make better decisions.
That being said, did you always figure coaching was going to be in your future in one form or another?
No, it's funny. When I first got out of college, we owned the family business, and my dad had, you know, he had cancer once or twice when I was, I guess it started when I was in college, and you know, it was a bar and a restaurant, and I just saw the toll it was taking on him. And, you know, when I graduated Wheeling, I had chances to go overseas and play in some, you know, leagues that probably weren't worth going. Fran O'Hanlon gave me great advice. He says, if you have something good at home, don't go overseas, because it really takes you a long time to get back in the flow of life. So I thought about that. And then I think Coach O was asking me if I was interested in the graduate assistant spot. And I just saw the way my dad was working. And I wasn't enough removed as a player yet to even think like a coach. So I went into the family business, and I worked 80-hour weeks for 10 years with no basketball. And, you know, my two closest friends were head coaches in their 20s. And there was certainly some jealousy when they're involved in basketball and I'm like ruining people's lives in a bar, you know?
So what's the road back into the game? What door opens?
Well, so it's funny. When my father passed away, I guess I kind of held on to the business for another year or two. And I'm like, this stinks. Yeah, I didn't even realize how hard I was, you know, how much time I was spending there until I sold it. And I would pinch myself that I'm on the couch at like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. I'm like, what is this? Like, you people actually do this? They come home and they relax? Like, I had no idea what it was. So what I ended up doing is I bought a car wash, because I thought that would give me the flexibility to kind of pay my dues in coaching. And the timing was good, because Jerry Matthews here at Stockton had just lost two assistants. And, you know, working at Division III as an assistant at a lot, many schools, you're basically a volunteer. So I basically volunteered for 10 years. I was making like $4,000 for 10 years. And I treated it as if I was, when I was an assistant, I acted as if I was a head coach in terms of my preparation and whatnot. And I just kind of ran the car wash, and I probably ran that into the ground, because I took my volunteer job more seriously.
Did it click with you right away, the coaching? First couple practices, were you like, yeah, this is where I need to be?
Yeah, I think like the first, maybe our first weekend games, I'm like, wow, you know, just like, you know, the passion I had and like the intensity I had on the sideline, like, man, I haven't had this in a while. This is awesome. You know, the nerves, being around the kids was great. That experience at the Hurley House, you know, it's funny. I wanted to have an impact on kids like Coach Hurley had on the kids he had at St. Anthony's. And I wanted to coach kids that needed more than a coach. I wanted a coach that needed a bigger part of them to get through life, you know? I just felt that those kids appreciate you more than the kids that don't really need you, you know? So, you know, when I was in high school, I probably had thought about it. But then when I got to college, I didn't, just because of the family obligations and want my dad to enjoy life. But certainly the minute I started coaching with Coach Matthews, it was like, wow, this is what I want to do.
Was the game different you know, 10 years, we talk about, we just had a long conversation about kids being different than when we grew up. Did you feel like there was an adjustment to how things were done? The idea that things were becoming more specialized, I'm sure, had started to take hold, stuff like that? Or was it, you know, basketball's basketball and we're fine?
No, you know what? Back then, there was no difference like between 96 and like 2006, right? When I started, I coached 95, 96 with Billy Lang at Eustis. And there really wasn't a much of a change in those 10 years, especially with Coach Matthews, because he was so old school. Like, he'd still coach like it was 96 if he was coaching today, you know, in terms of a lot of the things he would do. The biggest change has been from now to like 10 years, you know, even 6-7 years ago. Like, Steph Curry's changed the game more than anybody, you know, just, and having guys look at the analytics of the 3-point shot. And, you know, I often think back, God, I wish I had a green light like these guys have today. Like, I made a lot of threes in my college career, and I didn't have near the green light that we're given today. So it's changed more in the last 5 years. I think often how Coach Matthews would be able to handle today's game, because I don't. He would not have liked the 90-point games. He liked it played in the 60s and whatnot.
Talk about the impact Jerry Matthews had on you and how he helped kind of mold you into the coach you are today.
Yeah, he was great. He was, you know, he was so detailed when it comes to certain things, then not detailed when it comes to others. I think the things that were really important to winning and losing, he focused on. He held kids accountable. Like, my guys think I can be hard, but man, he was hard on kids. But they loved him, because the minute practice was over, he went back to being like, you know, basically a father figure to those guys. And no matter how bad a kid practiced, the switch went off. And there was compassion and empathy and everything he did. And I think that's the thing I noticed the most, is if you have a great relationship with a kid, then you can really, really coach him hard. But you better work pretty hard at that relationship. And he was awesome at that. That was his greatest strength, really.
What was the first challenge you faced as a coach that was something you never thought you would have to deal with? Because I think with young players, young coaches, everything is focused on getting ready for the next game or practice today. But there are so many things that come into play with college athletics. Was there a first thing that you had to deal with that you're like, whoa, I didn't think I'd have to worry about this?
No, you know, I mean, I feel like I've been lucky in a way. Like, we had some problems when I was an assistant, and that's another huge change. Kids are better behaved today than they were 15 or 20 years ago. Like, they're not near as social, right? They're a lot more likely to just go back to their room and like do nothing. I think marijuana is probably more prevalent, but drinking is less prevalent. Well, you know, call me crazy, but people are better behaved when they're stoned than they are when they're drunk. Like, they just are. So we've had so few problems. Like, we have a really behaved team. Now, knock on wood, now I'll probably end up having to deal with a problem this week, but I've been lucky in that regard. We did have some 2008, 9, 10 in that time where there'd be bar fights and this and that. And when it happened down here, it hit the newspapers because they were Stockton basketball players. So that, in fact, I was in Mexico when a big thing went down, and I was getting married. So here I had the phones ringing off the hall. The girl from the Atlantic City Press wants to know about this fight. I'm like putting like an outfit on to get married. So that might have been an aha moment. As a head coach, I haven't had it too much. It's more or less coaching at Division III. You're not just a coach. You're worried about the meals. You're worried about, you know, a lot of the administrative stuff. So that could have been it. Just realizing there's a lot more to the job than just knowing basketball. And, you know, it's working well with others in our department and this and that.
You were an assistant and associate head coach for about 10 years before you took over the program. Was there a point where you started to think that, or even a conversation with Jerry Matthews or with the administration, that at a certain point, this will be yours? Was it ever kind of talked about like that?
I don't know if it was that definitive, because you're still dealing with a state school, so you don't know what can happen, you know, and it's Division III. Now, we had a ton of success, like, and I, you know, I was lucky in a way, like, Coach Matthews had just lost two assistants, but the reason he lost them because they didn't have the time to dedicate anymore. And they may have held on a little bit longer, and the program wasn't quite as successful in a 7 or 8 year stretch. And I was able to come in and I worked full time. And I think the fruits of my labor helped right away the program. And Coach Matthews, you could tell how much he appreciated having somebody in the office at, you know, 1 o'clock every day. just thinking about basketball, when he was running practices on his own quite a bit just because guys couldn't get here. So I think when we had some success, then people started to notice that I had some real value. And I think I have characteristics that are like a head coach. I mean, I really am not afraid to hold guys accountable. And a lot of coaches struggle with that. A lot of coaches are good cop coaches, which you need. You know, you can't hold guys accountable without having somebody that shows a lot of empathy. Well, I wasn't the empathy guy. I was like the hold accountable guy, similar to Coach Matthews. So, we were similar in a way. And Kevin Brooks was an assistant. And Bob Hutchings, the late, great Bob Hutchings, was awesome at putting an arm around guys. So we had a great thing going for a while there with two guys that were like drill sergeants and two guys that were the most loving coaches in the world, you know?
Part of that run, or part of that time when you're an assistant, 2009, you guys go to the national championship game. What's that run like, and to get that high up the mountain? Like, I mean, that's just, it's an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah, it's funny. I can remember Coach and I, we had a bus, but I think we had a car too. And him and I would drive to certain things, like a press conference or something. And we would be like, can you believe this? Like, we were like pinching ourselves the entire time. Yeah, it was great. It was a great group of kids. I mean, we were really, really talented. It was just the right mix of real talent and toughness. Yeah, it was great. It was a great year. And that's kind of what we're trying to get back to, right? Like, it's probably why I'm disappointed today that the season ended two Fridays ago, I wanted that experience again for our kids.
So when you take over in 2016, you talked about, it's being a state school and you just don't know, but how do the wheels start to get put in motion? Like, how did it all come together?
Well, again, Jerry kind of lined it up where he would retire in August, where they really didn't have time, and Lonnie Folks, the athletic director at the time, was a big advocate of mine, and he had a lot to do with it. And then Dr. Kesselman, the president, for some reason, he saw a ton in me. I guess from afar, he was able to see it, and he's been a huge advocate of mine, which, if you have the president, I mean, I guess that's pretty good. So I was named the interim, and then we did that interim year. We had a good year. We didn't have a great year, but we did win the ECAC championship. It was the first time in the school's ever done that. And that I can remember because we were between ADs. Lonnie left and we had a new AD, and we were in our summer. We have like a summer orientation for all the athletic staff. And the president was there, and Dr. Kesselman said, and Scott's been an interim for a year, but that'll change this week. And I didn't have to interview for it. Which I still really am grateful for that. Like, just the stress of interviewing for something you really want. And you think you deserve too, that I'm not sure how it'd come off in the interviews just from the stress. And every time we're doing interviews now with new coaches and whatnot, I always feel bad for them because it looks like a really stressful thing. And I thank God I didn't have to go through it.
So when you go from associate head coach to, well, interim, but basically take over the program, and you talked about, you had no problems holding people accountable. Was there any change in dynamic with the kids on the roster?
I think I had to, my first year or two, first of all, you're replacing a legend, and that's not easy. And even though, like, in the last 5 or 6 years that I was associate head coach, I did most of the game coaching because Coach Matthews had a bad knee, so he really couldn't get up and down. So I coached the games for 5 or 6 years. So I was ready for game coaching. But we still had a culture that was kind of his, kind of mine, and we needed to get, there were some guys on the roster I basically had to get rid of that were really good players because they didn't have I was a little more organized than Coach in my culture and my core values, and I wasn't going to bend my core values for one or two guys. Everybody's core values should be different. Your core values should be what your personality is. And these guys didn't live my core values. I'm not sure Coach even thought that deep into it. He just took who you had and he was great at molding whoever it was. But I wanted guys that loved basketball as much as I did. I wanted guys that loved camaraderie as much as I did. And I think the forefront of our program, it just became, we wanted a team that was connected. And I had certain guys that weren't connected and didn't love it as much as me. So I think once we got rid of them, that's when the program flourished.
And you talked about those, several years as your associate, you're kind of coaching the games up and you're the guy up and down. Do you remember the first time you drew something up, made an adjustment, did something tactically that like made the difference between a win and a loss? Like, is there one memory of the first time you did that? And if so, what did that feel like? Because that's just got to be an incredibly gratifying moment.
Now, you know, like, I think about it now, because now as the head coach, you don't think as clear as you did when I was an assistant. Like, when I was an assistant, I was able to focus on, like, I really focused on matchups and you know, I knew exactly what matchup we wanted to attack, because I wasn't worried about a million other things. Coach Matthews was awesome at holding guys accountable for not boxing out, not sprinting the floor. So he took care of those details. In a lot of cases, that's the stuff that wins the game. You know, when guys weren't playing hard enough, he would hold them accountable for that. And I just focused on the offense for the most part. I mean, I can remember, calling sets in a timeout. I can remember the rules were a little different then, that you were able, as a coach, you were able to call a timeout on the fly. And I can remember a few times doing that and coach saying, man, that was a good timeout. Like, because it looked like we were going to lose a loose ball in the corner of it, you know, of a tight game. So I can certainly remember that, but I think back now, cause I don't feel like I have a grasp of the games as much as I did then, but it's because I don't have Coach Matthews. You know, he took care of a lot of the nuts and bolts and the important stuff. And I was just able to focus on the glamorous stuff, like calling plays.
I'm curious, is the location so close to the Jersey Shore of Stockton, is that a draw in recruiting?
There's not too many basketball players that surf. Right. Not too many NJAC players, but you know, I think the Atlantic City campus is starting to generate some interest with kids in like the Philadelphia Catholic League. And we still haven't really, you know, it still hasn't become a niche, but there are families that have second homes, maybe in Seattle or Brigantine or whatnot, where they're like, well, maybe we send a kid, you know, son to Stockton. So I think at some point we're going to break through and start getting one or two of those kids. We haven't needed to do it yet. You know, every school has its niche. Our niche is full financial aid New Jersey kids, because, you know, we can compete with the scholarship schools for those kids. It's a little easier to get into Stockton when you come from need. You know, at-risk students are a little easier to get admitted. So it's been our niche. Our niche has not been middle-class kids from Pennsylvania, because the private schools are really, really competitive with those kids. So it's funny, you can't fight your niche. If you do, you're just like swimming upstream. And I did that when my first couple of years. I'm recruiting kids from like Shawnee. And at the end of the day, we're not going to give them the best financial package, even though we're a lot cheaper to start with. So I quickly found out what our niche was, and those are the kids I go after the most.
I think it's obvious from our conversation, but just how much does kind of being part of this local basketball community mean to you? Just because you've mentioned so many great names and names that anybody, I think even casual basketball fans, would know, and you talk about getting texts and stuff like that. How much do you just kind of relish kind of that personal connection in this circle?
It's probably the most important thing to me is camaraderie and the friendships. And, you know, like Billy Lang and I sitting on the beach 3 or 4 summers ago, where, you know, like I'm always in his ear about basketball stuff. And he goes, you got it wrong. It's more about your culture. It's more about this. And he says, you know, he's kind of the one that really got me turned on to the core values. And we're talking about him. And he goes, no, they have to be who you are. And he's telling me who I am. He goes, you're unbelievably at connecting groups of friends. Like, you know, like Billy's friends with Chris because of my friendship with Billy and, you know, whatnot. So I've always been able to like kind of link different guys together. So I think that's probably what I enjoy most in life is just the friendships and, you know, basketball. That is a great way to make friends.
And to that point, my final question, what is the favorite part of your job? Day-to-day, favorite part of being the head coach at Stockton?
The favorite part of being a head coach at Stockton is probably graduation day, right? I mean, we have a ton of first-generation college students. And our mission statement is we're teaching life skills through the game of basketball. So I think getting them to that graduation is the fruits of the labor, you know? So without a doubt, just seeing the kids walking into Boardwalk Hall, there's 9,000 people there. And you see like there's kids with like tears running down their face because they're overwhelmed about the amount of people that are there for their graduation. So without a doubt, graduation day is the best day. You know, basketball is great, but I think I would enjoy coaching football or baseball just as much. It's not the sport. It's the impact you're having on young people is what's awesome.
Scott Bittner, this was a ton of fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you having me.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank Stockton University head men's basketball coach Scott Bittner for being our guest this week. Now, if you like the podcast, want to help us out, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.